This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, here comes Leopard.
We've known for months about the big headline features about Leopard, things like Time Machine and Spaces, but it's only in the past few weeks that it's become apparent that Apple's put a lot of thought into the little things as well, and it's these I'm really excited about with 10.5.
Chris Finn joins us with everything you need to know about Apple's newest operating system and answers the question, is it time for you to upgrade? Craig Grinnell joins us with three new shareware reviews, including two completely free shareware products, along with Q&A with Trevor Middleton on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hi everyone, I'm Brad Gibson. Well, it's finally here. Mac OS X Leopard has pounced on the scene, becoming the sixth major release of OS X. And from the early reviews of the product and long lines on February 26th at the Mac Live Expo convention in London and at Apple's retail stores, it appears Leopard is one cool cat. I spoke to just a few of the many Mac faithful who lined up before 6 p.m. to get their hands on the latest Mac OS outside the booth at Mac retailer Computer Warehouse. Gary Erie from Bevershire joins me right now, and he just bought Leopard, standing in line here at the Computer Warehouse booth. Why did you buy Leopard? I know it sounds like a stupid question, but many people wonder.
It's because I work in the IT industry. I work for a design company. I'm their IT manager, so I support the Macs all day. I'm a bit of a Mac fan, and I want to make sure that I have a Leopard as soon as I can get it. Right. It's probably the first time that I've stood in line for any Apple product, actually. but I have been following the blogs on the internet and looking at the websites, and I thought, well, out of curiosity, let's get a copy today. I was going to come here anyway.
Right.
So get a copy today and just go from there.
Any particular features that you know of in Leopard that you really think you're going to be able to take advantage of either personally or at work?
Personally, it will be Time Machine, because that's what I need to back up my stuff, and it's going to make it seamless. And some of the people that I work for who've got their own businesses, that's going to make backing up their business data, which is critical, very, very easy. Mm-hmm. Other stuff is things like Spotlight, and just genuinely looking at the whole OS and making sure that the interface is more uniform. It's more about that. It's ironing out those little bugs that have existed for the last few years.
Jason Kirk from London joins me right now. He's standing in line to get Leopard here in just a couple of minutes. Tell me, why are you deciding to upgrade to Leopard now?
I went over to Mac back in March, April time, and there's still a couple of things on Windows that I like to use. So I hear it's got Boot Camp.
Right.
So I want to kind of, you know, run Windows as well as everything.
But so Boot Camp's really important to you in Leopard.
It will be, yeah. Will
Any
be
other features that you know of that you really want to take advantage of?
The timeline is an absolutely brilliant idea.
Time Machine, you mean?
Is it Time Machine?
Yeah.
To
back up your data.
Back up on my data, so in case if I forget anything,
right,
I can always go back and everything. And I'm just really happy with the whole Mac system anyway, so right, just having the latest piece of technology.
Have you ever stand in line for a product like this before?
No, I haven't.
So those are the thoughts of just a few of those who laid out the £89 for Leopard. The big question now is it worth you upgrading? I recently sat down with Mac Format Deputy Editor Chris Finn to answer that question and also get a more in-depth look at many of Leopard's features that Apple didn't tell us about until just the past few weeks. Chris, before we get into what's new in Leopard, we should probably tell people what the system requirements are for the new OS. You need an Intel-based Mac, a PowerPC G5-based Mac, or a PowerPC G4 with at least an 867 MHz processor, 512 megs of RAM, and a DVD drive for installation. So those are the minimum system requirements that you need. And finally, you should know that Leopard is going to be retailing for £85 and is available immediately through retailers as well as online. Now, Chris, before we get into these new features that we're going to talk about that are brand new that we just recently heard of, let's also talk about the main features that we've known about for months. And there are four of them that are really the main nucleus of what makes Leopard. And let's begin with Time Machine.
Yep, Time Machine's a backup system. It automatically backs up your data from your Mac onto an external drive. It saves versions of your files as well, so that you can step back through time and find an earlier version of a file. And it makes the whole process much simpler. Finally, the Mac has a built-in backup client. Now, though the backup client in Windows XP was never particularly good, at least Windows XP had a backup client built into the OS. Now, Mac OS X has one too.
Now, we should tell people, Chris, that Time Machine is going to need a lot of storage space depending upon how much information you have on your hard drive to save.
That's quite right. And, of course, you'll need even more space because of the way that Time Machine stores versions of your files. But that shouldn't be a problem. I mean, even if a 500 gigabyte external hard drive is sort of coming in at about £65 these days, it's really not that expensive. So it should be easy to do. And, frankly, what price your data? What price your photographs of your wedding, what price your photographs of your kid? You need to back up. Buy a hard disk, for goodness sake.
Exactly. Now let's move on to Spaces, another big feature. In today's Macs, you can run so many applications at once. Multitaskers often find their windows cascading endlessly into one another. But Apple has basically tackled this problem by introducing Spaces. It's a take on a decades-old technology of virtual desktops, right?
Absolutely right. It's an old idea, as you say, and the idea is that people create virtual spaces for their work. So you might have a space for web browsing and email, you might have a space for watching stuff on video, you might have a space for doing your work, you might have a space for listening to iTunes. And the idea is that those are discrete spaces on your screen that you can then toggle between. So you have a full screen display of just your web browsing and email, and you can switch for different space and concentrate solely on doing the work that you're doing in, let's say, InDesign. It's a really nice idea, and if you're disciplined enough to use it, it will really make your life much, much quicker.
Okay, and the new Finder, this is what Steve Jobs called a new desktop, and it's really a group of changes to the overall OS X general interface, right?
Quite right. The new Finder, it looks different. It looks very much more like iTunes currently looks, with a sidebar with drop-down sections for your devices, for locations, for shared Macs on your network and shared PCs on your network. But there's some new features as well. You've got Quick Look, which is a fantastic little application add-on for looking at the contents of your files without having to open up the host application that created them before you can see them. That's going to save me an absolute age. You've got stacks in the dock, so you right-click, you click on a stack, and it fans out the files that are in that stack. It's basically a sort of super folder. You've got the sidebar that we've talked about, and one of the things that the sidebar does, as well as giving you access to shared files on shared Macs, it also gives you access to controlling another Mac remotely over a local internet or over the internet. This is really, really big stuff, and it's something that Apple hasn't really made much of, and I don't really know why. It's a feature that Windows has had for years and years and years, and it'll make such a difference to me when I'm troubleshooting my dad's Mac back home in Scotland. The ability for me to connect from my machine to his and control it remotely is going to make troubleshooting Macs for aging relatives much, much simpler.
Okay, and the final main feature that we're going to talk about is iChat. Basically, this time around, Apple's added a number of new features, including tab browsing, a new invisible status to hide your online presence from your other admirers, lots of little things like that. Tell us about those.
Those little things you talked about are absolutely there. You're going to make browsing and using iChat much better. There's a few things that are even nicer. So you've got photo booth style effects for doing the warping and the twisting as well. You've also got the ability to do special effects as well. If you're into movies, you might know as green screening or blue screening. This is a fantastic little idea. It replaces the background behind you with a picture of your choice or a moving image of your choice. And the way that Apple's done it is really, really nice. You step out of frame, the Mac effectively takes a picture of what's behind you so that it knows what the background looks like, and it replaces the background with the photo or video effect that you choose. Anybody who uses this to convince the boss that they're hard at work when they're actually sitting lounging on the beach is immoral.
Yeah, that's true, but at least a new feature nonetheless. Now, Chris, let's get into some of the new features that we've heard about in the last few weeks since Apple announced that Leopard was coming on October 26th. They kind of announced a lot of new features on us all at once and kind of surprised us with some of these new things that are coming. And let's begin with Spotlight. Basically, a new Boolean search in Spotlight, and lots of other things that you can do to search for content on your Mac. Tell us how it works.
Spotlight, when it was introduced in Tiger, I thought was a fantastic idea with a terrible interface. The indexing is brilliant. The speed of searching, at least if you've got a decent spec Mac, is very, very good. But you were very limited in what you could search for, and or rather, the way in which you could construct search terms. In Leopard, we now get proper Boolean searching. What that means is you can define and or properties as part of your searching. Now, the idea of that is that you could really build very, very powerful search terms to find the files you really want very, very quickly. It's not just that, though. There's other new stuff in Spotlight. You can do quick calculations directly in the Spotlight window by using standard mathematical operators like an asterisk for multiply and a slash for divide. You can look up dictionary definitions directly from within Spotlight. And you can also, and this is a really good one, you can search back through your web history. Now, there's a bunch of third-party apps that let you do that. Integrating it right into the OS is going to make it much, much simpler to go back through your web history and find a particular page or a particular little chunk of text that you'd found earlier on in that day.
Now, Chris, there's a lot of new features coming to macOS 10 Leopard's Mail 3.0, and one of them is data scraping, which allows you to recognize stuff in your mail and do things with it. Explain how that works.
For me, this is actually the most exciting feature in Leopard. What Mail 3.0 does is it looks at your incoming email, and it's intelligently analyzing the information that's in your email. The upshot of that is that if someone sends you an email that's got their address at the bottom of it, say, Mail will recognize that that's an address. You can click on a little icon that will appear when you hover over it and add that to an existing contact or use that to create a new contact. The same goes for phone numbers, email addresses, all that sort of stuff. You can map an address as well, click on it and you'll be shown a map of where that address is, which is a really, really useful way of getting information from an email, an incoming email, into your address book. But even cooler than that, it'll do the same thing with appointments. So that if you have an email come in that sets up a meeting with someone, Mail will automatically recognize that. You can click on it and add that to your iCal automatically without the person having had to first set up an iCal event and then mail you the .ics file to begin with. It's got another trick up its sleeve, though. It's intelligent enough so that if you, Brad, were to email me to say, let's record the podcast tomorrow at 4 o'clock, Mail would then look at that email. It would recognize that the word tomorrow means the day after now, and it would say, okay, so that means I'll record that in for, let's say, Wednesday, if today was Tuesday, and I'll put that into your iCal automatically. It's a really, really nice feature. It really makes it obvious that Apple has thought about how people actually use email as well.
Okay, next on our list is text-to-speech. A lot of people might know that that technology is available in macOS 10 right now, but a lot of people don't use it for a lot of different reasons. But this time around, text-to-speech is really different. It now has a voice, and it's called Alex.
Hi, this is Alex, the new voice in Leopard. Just to be clear, what you're hearing is the Mac automatically converting typed text into speech. Sure, earlier versions can do this too, but have you ever heard one that sounded quite so natural?
So, Chris, that's what Alex sounds like. It sounds much better than text-to-speech has ever sounded in macOS 10. Tell us about it and why it's better.
There's a few reasons why it sounds more natural. I'll grant you that last little bit with the inflection rising at the end of the question didn't sound particularly natural, but you can tweak it a little bit as well. But one of the things that makes it sound more natural than previous ones is a really, really simple little trick, and it's that it breathes. If you listen very carefully, if you rewind your podcast and listen, you'll hear that during that little snippet, the voice, Alex, actually takes a breath before it starts a sentence.
Right.
Which really makes it sound much, much more human than the sort of synthetic voices that we've heard before.
Right.
From the likes of Victoria and Ralph. And this is part of a wider push in Leopard for accessibility, particularly for visually impaired users. Leopard now introduces support for a bunch of Braille devices, so that if you've got a Braille pad, you plug it into your Mac and text on screen is parsed and displayed in a tactile way on the Braille pad, so you can interact with your computer much more simply. And also it's introduced the ability for visually impaired users to be alerted when they're typing and they make a mistake. If you're typing as a visually impaired user and you make a mistake, ordinarily you wouldn't notice it until you go back to review your text. Now Leopard can alert you to the fact that you've made a mistake, either with a little alert sound or by actually telling you that you've made a mistake and by reading out the word you've spelled incorrectly.
Okay, some great new features in text-to-speech. Let's move on to auto-activation of fonts.
Excuse me? It's Alex again. Sorry to interrupt, but before you move on, you should also talk about the other accessibility features that Leopard has. Nobody really mentions them, but 10.5 has made a huge leap forward, particularly for visually impaired users.
Yes, thank you very much, Alex. Don't interrupt again. Yeah, he's quite right, though. We do have a lot more support in OS 10 at Leopard for accessibility, particularly if you're visually impaired. We've got support for Braille devices, for Braille pads, so that if you are visually impaired, you should be able to plug in your Braille pad. The Mac should be able to recognize it automatically and transcribe the text that you would see on screen into a tactile Braille output on the pad. And we've also got the ability, if you're visually impaired and you're typing, for the Mac to alert you if you've made a mistake. Normally you wouldn't notice that until you'd actually come back to review the text, but now the Mac can alert you either with an alert sound or by reading out the misspelled word, and you can obviously take action based on that.
You know, if I'm not careful, Chris, Alex could actually take over my job here.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on to auto activation of fonts, and I think it pretty much speaks for itself. Explain how it works.
This is a big one for the core audience for the Mac, the graphic designers and the creative professionals working in the industry. For years, we've had products like Extensis Suitcase, whose sole role was to manage fonts, and one of its key tricks was to auto-activate fonts. So if you opened an InDesign document that contained, let's say, Myriad, which is Apple's corporate font, and Myriad wasn't currently active on your system, Suitcase would automatically activate it, so you didn't have to worry about going in and manually mucking about with fonts. And that system works very well, and obviously Suitcase has other features as well. But by integrating the auto-activation of fonts right into the OS, where it always should have been, Apple's actually made a really big step forward. And if it works very well, as I imagine it will, then it's a real, real boon for creative professionals, particularly those who aren't working in large corporate environments.
Okay, grammar checking. Across the entire system of macOS 10 right now, we have spell checking, but now we're going to have the ability to do the same thing with grammar.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, I can sense wordsmiths the length of the country cringing, particularly if they've used Word, with its little green squiggly underlines as you write a sentence that's perfectly grammatically correct, but Word goes, no, that's wrong, this is what I think you're trying to say. Now, hopefully, the Mac will do it better, or rather, hopefully, Apple will do it better OS-wide with 10.5. I don't hold high hopes for it, because even though there's a grammar checker, or rather, it's called a proofreading tool in Pages, I don't think it actually does very, very well. Its main role seems to be to pick up when you use very complex words, where a simple word would do, and to pick up on things like missing a capital letter at the start of a sentence. It doesn't actually seem to analyze the entire sentence and make suggestions for how it could be bettered. We'll have to see. Frankly, anything that makes people write better English is a good thing as far as I'm concerned, but we'll have to see how it's actually implemented to see how well it comes through. But the idea of having a system-wide spell check, as we have just now, a system-wide grammar check, is a good thing, and we'll have to see how well it's implemented by Apple.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. Let's move on to Automator, and basically the ability to do UI recording and playback using a new tool called Watch Me Do.
Automator is a great tool, again introduced in 10.4, that I thought was a fantastic idea, really, really poorly implemented. And part of the problem with that is that third-party developers, if they want to hook into the power of Automator, have to write Automator actions themselves, which you can then add and you can use as part of Automator workflows. In 10.5, that model, although it still exists and is probably much, much more powerful and efficient than the Watch Me Do system, has been, to a certain extent, thrown out. And we now have this system where, even if an application isn't aware of Automator, you can Automator script it by simply clicking record, by doing an action, so file new, type in some text, file close, save as, or whatever it is you're doing. Automator will watch what you're doing, record it, and then you'll be able to replicate that activity again and again and again using Automator, whether you're saving them out as standalone applications or attaching them to iCal events or whatever. It has the potential to be absolutely huge and to really, really revolutionize your work if you do repetitive tasks.
All right, next is Bootcamp, and most of us running Tiger probably know about Bootcamp already, but now it is really complete and now provides updated drivers that are now Microsoft certified, among many other features. Tell us about Bootcamp.
Bootcamp, as you say, is now finished. It's complete. It's rolled into the OS. Everything's there. It's very, very simple to use, and you have the ability to switch between your Mac and your Windows operating system much, much more smoothly even than you had in the past, with menu bar, with task bar buttons and icons. The most important thing, though, as you identified there, is that the drivers are now Microsoft certified. We now know that these things have passed Microsoft's fairly rigorous testing schedule and testing regime, and they're now ready for prime time.
All right, now there's a dictionary in macOS 10, but a lot of people don't know about it, and especially now with a new feature, it might be something that people use a lot more, and that's the ability to harness the power of Wikipedia right in your dictionary.
Absolutely. Wikipedia has saved my life on so many occasions. But yeah, the dictionary app now allows you to look up stuff directly from within Wikipedia. It gives you a very good centralized resource for fact-checking and for definitions as well. It's got a Japanese to English and English to Japanese dictionary as well. Not a translation tool, but a dictionary. So if you're working with the Far East, that's going to come in really handy as well.
Let's move on to printing, and now printing is even easier. You now have location-aware printing, which basically allows you to print in multiple locations, and Leopard detects when you've changed those locations, right?
Absolutely right. I don't know how they're doing it. I assume that one of the big functions, one of the big features of the location-aware printing is simply looking at the SSID, the name of the wireless network that you're connected to. But basically, with Leopard, your Mac looks at a few variables and decides that it thinks it knows where you are in your life, so whether you're at work or at home, let's say, and it will switch the default printer based on your location. I used to use an application called Location X, which did the similar sort of thing, but that was a manual switch you had to apply. But the fact that you can sort of walk into your home, open your laptop, open a document, press Command P and enter without having to think about it should be a real boon.
And Chris, finally on our list is Unix certification. Mac OS X is now a fully certified Unix operating system.
Yep, you might not have realized that it wasn't before, but if you were very eagle-eyed, you'd have noticed that when Apple referred to anything to do with Unix and OS X, it referred to OS X as being a Unix-like operating system. Now it's fully signed up. It conforms to the single Unix specification, and it conforms to, wait for it, POSIX 1003.1. Now, for the average user in the street, the fact that it's fully user certified doesn't really mean an awful lot. But particularly for, again, corporates and enterprise users, the fact that it's now Unix certified and it's got more support for open standards in the Unix community, it's really going to make it even more appealing to those who up to now might have gone, well, you know, it kind of says Unix, but it's not really, is it? It's sort of Unix light. It's sort of a candy-coloured, wishy-washy sort of Unix. Now, full, rock-solid, metal-plated, locked-down version Unix is going to be very exciting for a lot of geeks.
My final question to you is, how much of a major leap is Leopard from Tiger?
It depends on which way you look at it. For a lot of users who got to even 10.2 and thought, you know, this is pretty good, there probably isn't that much there to prompt them to move up to Leopard. But I think that's missing the trick. There's a bunch of headline new features. Time Machine's the biggest one, as far as I can see. The fact that you've now finally got a proper OS level backup that's really robust and should be very easy to use and should actually mean that people actually finally back up their Macs without thinking too much about it. But for me, the thing about upgrading your OS has never necessarily been about the headline features. It's always been about those little things that Apple does that just makes your life much, much simpler. One of the things that really endeared me to Tiger when it came out was the ability, when you drop in images or PDFs into an email, to have them resized and rescaled automatically for you on the fly without having to do that in a separate graphics application. In Mail in 10.5, I love the data scrape stuff. It's those little things that really make a big, big difference. And while the big features you might think you can get by without, particularly if you use third-party apps, I think it's the small features that's really going to make people glad they upgrade when they do. It's not as huge a leap from 10.4 to 10.5 as it was from 10.1 to 10.2, but it's still a big, big move forward. And there's a bunch of really cool stuff in there that I can't wait to get using properly.
Chris, thanks so much for going over these. I'm sure in the coming months in Mac Format Magazine, you'll have more in-depth coverage of Leopard.
No problem, bud. We certainly will.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of Mac Format Magazine. You can look for the feature, The Complete OS X Leopard Installation Guide, in the December issue of Mac Format. Craig Grinnell is back with us this month for more great Mac shareware and freeware picks from the November issue. Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Brad?
Very good, and thanks again for joining us. Let's get right into our November favorites, and this time you decided to highlight three products and not just our regular two. Let's begin with Tinker Tool. It's a free application, and we all like free. It's been around for several years. It enables you to activate some of the hidden features of Mac OS X that Apple, for whatever reason, deemed not good enough for public consumption. So let's begin with the basics, Craig. What sort of things can Tinker Tool do?
This is a really, really good little app, actually, and it enables you to do an awful lot of very, very small things, but they kind of add up over time and make your system more usable. For example, there are options for Finder. You can show and hide hidden in system files. You can disable some of the animation effects, which makes the operating system feel a bit more snappy. And you can also stop Finder littering network drives with invisible files. Other great things for the dock, you can make hidden applications semi-transparent in the dock, which is a good visual indicator of which apps are hidden. You also get more pinning and minimization options as well. In general settings, you can set two scroll bar arrows at both ends of the scroll bar, which makes scrolling a bit easier. You can change the screen grab format, accelerate sheets animation when saving documents, and also amend system fonts. And there's also an option for Safari, which enables you to show the debug menu for some advanced options.
So how do you change the settings in TinkerTool? Is it difficult to use?
No, it's actually very straightforward to use. TinkerTool's interface is pretty much like a preferences window for most applications on your Mac. To change something, all you need to do is access the relevant section, such as Finder or Dock. Then you make changes by clicking checkboxes or selecting menu items. It's that simple. And sometimes, depending on what you've changed, you will have to restart Finder or the Dock or something like that. But TinkerTool provides buttons for you to do this, and it automates the process, really. Some things won't change until you relaunch applications or log in again, but that's kind of down to you, and it doesn't really make it any harder to use.
Now, Craig, I wonder, is it dangerous to mess around with macOS 10 settings? I mean, presumably Apple didn't make these settings accessible for a reason.
Well, actually, I've been using TinkerTool for a number of years now, and I've had no major problems with it whatsoever. Some of the settings I'm thinking were actually discarded by Apple primarily for aesthetic reasons, or to ensure macOS 10 remains streamlined. For example, the double scroll bar arrows, they might look a bit confusing to some people, and they don't look great. But hey, they work well. If you get used to them, scrolling is much, much easier. And sometimes some of the settings cause very minor aesthetic issues with macOS 10, but not performance issues. They don't make anything crash. And the tiny aesthetic problems are the worst of it, if you suffer from that at all. Generally, TinkerTool's usability benefits outweigh any potential minor problems by a long, long way. The thing is also, very importantly, TinkerTool also provides a reset function. So at any point, you can revert your Mac settings back to pre-TinkerTool states, or in fact also to their default settings as well. So it's completely safe.
Okay, so that, in a nutshell, is TinkerTool version 3.7c. It's free, and Craig gave it a Mac format choice, 5 out of 5 rating. Now, its website address is a little long, so we've linked to it in our enhanced podcast through iTunes, so you can simply look at it at the still image right now on your Mac through iTunes or the QuickTime player, click on the link, and the TinkerTool website will open up right in your favorite browser. We move on to product number 2, and that's Just Looking version 3. It's also freeware. It's a straightforward image viewer, and that is an entirely new version, right?
Yeah, it seems to be that way. It looks like the program has really gone back into Just Looking and reworked quite a lot of things. I reviewed version 2 for Mac format quite a while ago now, and it really wasn't up to scratch, but version 3 is a big improvement.
Now, you only gave Just Looking 4 out of 5 stars, Craig. Why?
Well, to be fair, you know, Just Looking does actually duplicate a lot of the functionality found in previews. You might think, what's the point? The thing is, you know, it's free, so there's no risk involved in trying it out and seeing if you like Just Looking's way of working a bit better. The thing is, there's one thing I really, really do like about Just Looking, and that's if you open an image, the application automatically loads every other image it finds in that folder into the thumbnails window, and so that makes it really, really easy to rapidly look through a folder of images. It's also pretty fast as well.
Okay, that's a quick look at Just Looking, and you can also get to it through our enhanced podcast link. And we wrap up with Eyeglasses. It's an affordable, fun application for enhancing your webcam settings in Skype and iChat.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's got all sorts of effects, enabling you to mess around with color settings and even orientation. And so if you want to rotate or mirror your image on the screen, you can do that.
But Eyeglasses has got a serious side to it as well, right, Craig?
Yeah, that's right. If the lighting in your room isn't great, you can amend the white balance and the brightness settings. You can also change the zoom and panning to better frame yourself in the shot. And this is useful if you work from home and you want to screen out the background.
And it's pretty easy to use, right?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there are a number of built-in presets, and of course, they're not all great, but some of them are really, really useful. But it's easy enough to make and save your own presets. And like Ecamm Network's other applications, such as Call Recorder for Skype, which I personally think is excellent, it's easy enough for anyone to get to grips with, really simple interface, but there are options under the surface for anyone wanting to explore further.
All right, that's Eyeglasses. Craig gave it 4 out of 5 stars. It costs £4, and you can also get to it through our enhanced podcast link. Craig, thanks for the shareware reviews for this month.
Okay, see you next month, Brad.
Craig Grinnell reviews shareware and freeware each month for Mac Format. His November reviews are on page 100. It wouldn't be Mac Format this week without questions and answers with Trevor Middleton. Welcome back, Trevor.
Hi there, Brad.
On each show, Trevor answers your questions about anything to do with the Mac, iPod, or iPhone. And you can email us with your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And please remember to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. Let's get right into the first question from Mikey Watts in China, who writes with a very simple and quick question. My translator widget no longer works as I can't type anything into the boxes. Any ideas?
Well, Mikey, most applications and widgets on your Mac have something called a plist file that stores your preferred settings. And sometimes one of these plist files can become corrupt, causing problems with the application. What you do when this happens is quit the application, in your case Dashboard, and delete the plist file by dragging it to the trash and then emptying the trash. The next time you open the application, it'll create a new plist file and you'll usually find that this has cured the problem. Now, you'll find plist files in one of two folders called Preference. The one with the translator plist file is in a folder called Library, which in turn is within your home folder. Like all plist files, it has a complex looking name, widget-com.apple.widget.translation.plist. Though it's a bit like those scary looking German words that you can usually break down into very simple components. Oh, and by the way, the other preferences folder is in the Library folder at the root level of your hard disk. Quick question, slightly longer answer. Brad.
All right, question two is from Jonathan Deacon. He's a student at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, Prince William's Old College. He wrote us, "My Mac keeps freezing every few minutes and only for about 10 seconds. I'm currently doing a virus scan, but nothing has been found yet. I haven't been doing anything different except I installed TomTom Home software for my new GPS. Do you know why this is happening and how to solve it?"
Well, Jonathan, I installed the TomTom Home software on my own Mac, and I noticed it's set to check for updates whenever you're logged into it. It could well be that your antivirus software is attempting to block the TomTom software when it attempts to check for updates. Just try temporarily disabling your antivirus software. If that doesn't work, try running a useful little Mac OS X utility called Activity Monitor, which you'll find in the Utilities folder on your Mac. The quickest way to get to it is through the Go menu in the Finder. So into the Go menu, choose Utilities, launch Activity Monitor. Activity Monitor lets you check what processes are happening on your Mac so you can see which of them is hogging the processor or the memory and so forth and causing your Mac to slow down.
And finally, question three is from Billy Jessup in Middlewich in Cheshire. He wrote, "I'm having trouble managing open windows in Mac OS X. When I was a Windows user, I used to tile them vertically, but there seems to be no option to do this in OS X. Is there anything I can do to achieve this apart from manually moving them around?"
It depends what you're trying to do, Billy. Mac OS X does have something called Expose, which will tile the open windows on your Mac, albeit not vertically. Expose is useful for comparing multiple open documents, photographs for instance, or if you want to keep tabs on what you currently have open. You can activate Expose through the F keys on your keyboard. F9 tiles all the currently open windows. F10 will tile all the windows in the currently active application, and F11 will clear everything away, giving you instant access to your desktop.
All right, three great questions, three great answers. Thanks so much for helping us, Trevor.
No problem, Brad.
You can email us with your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk, and please remember to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for this edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Chris Finn, Craig Grinnell, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakleropoulou. We're back with our next edition on Monday, the 12th of November. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.